Thank you for listening to the Music Behind podcast with me, your host, Susan Stone. Each episode, we explore the music that has inspired some of the greatest minds of our time through 9 different songs. This week, my guest is a personal icon, the brilliant composer and esteemed gentleman, Angelo Badalamenti. Hi, Angelo.
Hello, how are you? I'm quite flattered. That's quite an introduction, Susan.
It's all very true. I know a number of people who are really looking forward to hearing this podcast who also would fall into that category of very much admiring the work and the person that you are.
Thank you very much.
I feel very privileged for having the chance to have worked with you on a 44-inch test, and have to say I'm really thrilled to dig a little deeper into what music has had an impact on you throughout your life. I suppose to start things off, let's start at the beginning. Let's look at one of the first songs that blew your mind.
Needless to say, you know, songs that blow your mind, you know, through the years, there are always songs that really just, you know, hit home for one reason or another. But one in particular that I can tell you about is one time I was in New Jersey and I'm just riding in my car and I hear Nina Simone singing I Loved You, Porgy. And, you know, from the George Gershwin, Porgy and Bess. And it was just so soulful and just so real. She really kind of, you know, hit home with that. And it just had a tremendous effect on me. I had a pullover on the side of the road. And I remember literally the motor was running, but I just slumped over on the driver's side of my seat. It just got to me, and it you know, talking about a song that blows your mind and a recording, so it's a combination of both that was unbelievable. Talking about Nina Simone, I started out in the early songwriting days, mostly into the pop soul world and of writing material. But I was rather young, and I had written a couple of songs, one called I Hold No Grudge, and one called He Ain't Coming Home No More. I just had some, you know, lead sheets, no demos or anything like that. And being a young, aggressive songwriter, I found out where Nina Simone's office was in New York City. Sure enough, she was on Fifth Avenue. It was Nina Simone Enterprises or something, and it was in the winter time, around Christmas time. And I knock on the door, and a man comes to the door. He says, "What do you want, son?" I said, "Well, I have a couple of songs I'd like to play for Miss Simone." And this man was Andy Stroud, happened to be the husband of Nina. And he said, "Well, come in, son." He said, "She's out shopping at the moment, but she'll be back in about an hour or so." So I waited, and some 2 hours later, this woman comes in, and the husband said, "Nina, this young man wants to play a couple of songs for you." So she says, "Okay, let me take my coat off." She said, "All right, sing one." I said, "Okay, I'll be delighted to, Miss Simone, but I don't see a piano in the room." She says, "I don't have a piano." I said, wait a minute. I said, "Say that again. You don't have a piano? You want me to, how do I sing the song?" She says, "Sing." I said, "Oh, my goodness. Sing." So I go, "I hold no grudge. There's no resentment underneath. I'll extend the laurel wreath and we'll be friends. But right there is where it ends." She says, "I like that. I'll record that. You got another song? You got another song?" I said, "Well, yeah, I've got another song. Well, then sing." So I go, "And he ain't coming home no more." She says, "I like that song. I'll record that song. You got anything else?" I said, "No." She says, "Okay. I'll see you sometime." So she leaves the room, and the husband comes over to me. He says, "Boy, Nina really loves your song. I can tell you now. Come over 10 days to the A&R Studios in Manhattan. Nina's going to have a full orchestra, and she's going to be singing live with the orchestra. and she's going to be singing your two songs. But sure enough, 10 days, I go in and I walk into this room at A&R Studios, and there's this fantastic orchestra, you know, with 100 strings, and, you know, and Nina at the piano, and she's going, I hold no grudge. And man, I got to tell you, it was just mind-boggling. And, you know, you can imagine just singing a cappella like that, and you're just so intimidated, and no piano, my God.
I bet. Well, just in honor of the artist and obviously the track, let's play just a bit now.
I love you, Porgy. Don't let him handle me and drive me mad. If you can keep me, I wanna stay with you forever, and I'll be glad.
Let's move a little bit more recently. What's one of the last songs that's really blown your mind?
The song Alfie has always been a song that I've been, you know, just so much in love with, because, you know, as a composer, it's just so unpredictable. But one time I was at home, and there was a television show, you know, variety show of sorts, and Chaka Khan sang Alfie. And let me tell you something, it was just mind-boggling killer. I mean, she just kind of laid back, and the soul, it made the song even more beautiful. So it's just one of my very favorite songs.
What's it all about, Alfie? Is it just for that moment we live? What's it all about when you started out healthy? Are we meant to take more than we give? Or are we meant to be kind? And if only fools are kind.
Another question I'd love to know, what's a song that you wish you'd written?
One of the short operas by Pietro Mascagni, Cavaliere Rusticana, The Intermezzo. Paul Schrader, he wrote a letter and he said, Angela, I would love for you to do the music for The Comfort of Strangers. It's a combination of two worlds. It's, you know, the palazzos of Venice, you know, are you know, have all this architecture from the Byzantine style, and there's a lot of that element there. So I would love to have some of that kind of ethnic music, and then the father of Christopher Walken was an old traditional a father from the Italian world who was very strict, and I'd love to also use, for his theme, the father's theme, the intermezzo from the opera by Mascagni. So I saw clips of the film, and I told Paul that, yeah, I'd love to do the music and maybe tie in the two worlds. But when he came in, I said, listen, Paul, I do have a problem with the intermezzo, and I have to write something to replace that. He said, what do you mean replace it? He said, you know, we'd love it. This is what we want to use.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, you can't use it. He said, what do you mean I can't use it? It's used, Marty used it in Raging Bull and others. I want to use it for this film.
Mm-hmm.
It is so, so beautiful. You're going to be sued. Your movie company is going to be sued. He said, well, why? What do you mean sued? He said, it's public domain. I said, that music is much too beautiful for any human being to have composed. You have to understand that Mascagni didn't compose that theme. God wrote that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Only God could write that, Paul. So you don't have enough money to pay God. So why don't you let me try to write something, maybe a little bit in that style? And I said, all right, give it a shot, but I don't know. Anyway, I went home and I composed, you know, a theme for the Father, which was certainly influenced by Mascagni, but, you know, did my own thing. Paul loved it, and we used it.
Well, it's a beautiful score. Well,
thank you.
Let's listen to a piece of what influenced you. Changing gears here now, but what music would drive you crazy if you were stuck with you on an island?
You mean something that would add to the torture of being alone on an island?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think one song that used to drive me crazy, even though it was a big, big monster hit, and that was the song called Feelings. It was like, you know, feelings, feelings. Every time I heard that, it would just drive me up the wall. it was like, you know, really probably one of the reasons was that it was such a big hit. You know, you heard it everywhere. And that motif just kept, you know, hitting you. It's like I didn't hear any other part of the song except that, you know, that little motif.
Yeah.
And, you know, on every radio, you know, you would, you know, if you went to a couple of weddings during that summer, the first, and the bride and the groom will dance their first dance, and it's feeling, oh, give me a break, you know. That song would encourage me to make a swim for it if we were playing nonstop, and I'm a lousy swimmer. So.
Well, we won't torture you too long, but let's play just a clip. Note, but I think a very important question to ask, especially for someone that's a composer and such a prolific composer. What's a song that you would want played at your funeral?
One of the most beautiful things is a song I recorded with David Bowie singing, and it's a suite for a foggy day. It's a beautiful, beautiful recording, and the record company was Verve Records. Each year for 3 or 4 years did a charity album, and each year they had a different concept for it. I got a call and they said, Angelo, we'd love you to get involved with one of the Gershwin tunes, pick out a Gershwin song, and then maybe you could write a track, and then we would find a singer, you know, some celeb that you would collaborate with on it. Well, I picked the song Foggy Day in London Town because the verse is so incredibly beautiful, and that song lent itself to me. I could hear where I could do a real Angelo Badalamenti slow thing and mildly abstract and kind of dark.
Yeah.
I lay down a track and I put my vocal on it, and I bring it into the record company, and they hear it. They say, "Wow, this track is fantastic! Oh, imagine now if we get a real, you know, top-notch singer." And I said, "Well, I'd like what I did." Oh, they said, "Oh, Angelo, that you did very nicely. You sing very nicely, but we need to get, this is a collaboration. You have to collaborate with somebody, so we have to get another singer. A few days later, I'm in a recording studio and I'm recording with Tim Booth of the group James.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we did an album together called Booth and the Bad Angel. And as I'm recording with Tim, and I'm on the conductor stand, the engineer calls out and said, Angelo, there's a phone call from you for you. You think you can get it? I said, well, who is it? He said, it's David Bowie. So I said, okay. I said, you know, take five, everybody. And I get on the phone. I said, David, how are you? Yeah, great. He said, Angelo, he said, I just heard this track that you did for A Foggy Day. It's so incredibly beautiful. He said, please let me be the singer on this track. And I said, all right, David, I guess, you know, I have to give up my singing career and let you do it. and I said, you know, you're one of the voices that no question about it, would lend itself. I agreed to let Bowie do it. The next morning, my phone rings at 7:30 in the morning, and I pick up and I hear all kinds of static coming through and guys saying, Angelo, Angelo. I said, yeah, Bono. So Bono, how are you? He said, Angelo, I just heard a track that you just did that you've got to let me be the singer. He said, I am so busy. We're doing an album. I'm going on tour. This is the last thing I wanted to hear, something that I have to do, but I've got to do this. You got to let me do it. I said, Bono, I'm so sorry. Yesterday, I committed myself to David Bowie. He said, well, he sings good, too. Though I'm not looking forward to the funeral, I wouldn't mind hearing it again.
Well, let's play a section of his vocal.
Sure.
I was a stranger in the city, out of town, where the people weren't known. I had that feeling of self-pity. What to do? What to do? What to do? The outlook was decidedly blue.
Changing on to the next question, a song that gets you every time.
Well, there's just no question about it. a masterpiece of a song, as far as standards are concerned, mm-hmm. is Here's That Rainy Day. And Here's That Rainy Day was written by Jimmy Van Heusen, and Johnny Burke did the lyric. And it's just an incredible piece of music and lyric. It's a great marriage of lyric and music. I'll just tell you a nice story about Sammy. Sammy had told me so many stories, but one of them, you know, he wrote all these songs for Frank Sinatra. I mean, it was just incredible, you know, hit after hit and movie songs. And then I said to Sammy once, Sammy, how, you know, when you demonstrated like new songs with for Frank Sinatra, how did you know if he liked, you know, what you're playing for him? And he simply said, well, Jimmy Van Heusen would sit at the piano, and I would sing the song, and at the end of the song, it would be in a hotel room, let's say early morning, and there'd be, let's say, some breakfast being set up. And when I finished the song, if Frank Sinatra said, let's eat, that means that's it. I love the song. If he did not invite you for breakfast, that means he wasn't going to record it.
Let's have a listen to Bill Evans' interpretation of that song.
Yeah. Incredible pianist as well, of course. But there are so many great recordings of that song. And it's truly one of the great standards. Thank you.
would you recommend that anyone who is procreating these days, a song that every cool parent should put in their kids' record collection?
A very cool kiddie song, which is very, very beautiful, would be The Rainbow Connection. It's sung by, you know, Kermit, mm-hmm. Kermit the Frog, and the music is actually done by a friend of mine, Kenny Asher, and the lyric was done by the now president of ASCAP, Paul Williams, and it's just a very beautiful, plaintive song, and lyrically it also has some great meaning.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows and what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me.
The next question I imagine is a very personal one for you, because I'm sure people ask you this question a lot, and obviously you've written so many acclaimed scores over your lifetime, but what's one of the tracks from a favorite score that you haven't personally written?
Well, one of my favorite movie scores, believe it or not, was the film Laura, written by David Raskin. But a few years ago, I went to an ASCAP a concert at Carnegie Hall. Actually, it was rehearsal for the concert. And I was sitting next to David Raskin. It was my good fortune to sit next to him. And of course, I said, tell me about how you came to write that theme and all of that. And he told me this story, which is kind of remarkable. He, I think it was on a Sunday, he had got a call from a friend saying that a director from this movie got to hear a theme. Some various composers are going to come up Monday morning and play a theme which they would compose on spec for this new movie, Laura. And so he was out, I think, in the morning. He came home in the afternoon, and he said, "I got to get to the piano and write something." And on the piano there was an envelope. And it was, he could see it was from his wife, for David. Mm-hmm. But he didn't open it. He was so intent on trying to compose a theme, and he had a motif in mind. And he sat down, and he wrote the theme Laura, top to bottom. And then he opens up the envelope from his wife, and it said, "Dear David, I'm leaving. Our marriage is over." But thank God that he didn't open it up before, he wrote the theme. He would never have written the theme.
It would have been an incredibly different theme.
I think so. That would, maybe a theme that would work for a David Lynch movie.
Yeah,
or something.
Exactly.
Well, what do I know about that?
Question here, perhaps the most important, and I know when that means something to me, it certainly sticks out in my lifetime in a way of sheer thrill and terror and a forever fear of the name Bob. But your theme song, which is quite fitting, tell us a bit more.
theme song, you're speaking the theme song from Twin Peaks, I assume. And it's a wonderful story. David Lynch, you know, we got together originally on a movie, Blue Velvet, way back. Dennis Hopper and Isabella Rossellini. It's the first film that David and I did together. Did it in a most traditional way. When I say the word traditional, I mean as a composer, he had the film shot already, and then he, you know, the composer comes in, looks at the film with the director, and then composes the music. And in Blue Velvet, that was the case. After that, we established an immediate rapport and a pretty nice relationship. And he came to my office one day. He said, "Angelo, I'm going to do this television show. It's called Twin Peaks. And be great if you can compose some of the music even before I start shooting." Because music to David Lynch paints pictures for him. He's amazing that way. He hears something and all of a sudden he sees things. And so I said, "Yeah, okay, what is it all about?" How I worked with David mostly on Twin Peaks is I would sit at the keyboard. We would put some audio device, you know, even a little cassette at the time on an old Fender Rhodes piano. And he would sit next to me on my right, and then he would just talk to me. And, you know, he started, "Well, okay, what is Twin Peaks about, David?" And, you know, from the music. And then he just starts saying, "Well, you know, we're in a dark wood, and there's a moon out, and there's an owl in the background just going hoot hoot, and the wind is blowing gently through the sycamore trees." And I just started playing da-dum, di-o-di-o-da-dum. He said, "Yeah, that's it. That's a great mood. Just keep doing that. Keep doing it. Okay, now play that even slower, Angelo." And then I go even slower and slower. And then he said, "Well, even go slower than that." I'll say, "David, if I play it any slower than that, I'm going to be playing it in reverse." He said, no, Angelo, that's so beautiful. It's so beautiful when it's slow. Okay. So I went to that. Then he said, okay, now there's a girl coming from far off behind a tree. She's very lonely. She's sad. She's troubled. Her name is Laura Palmer, but she's very beautiful. Can you now segue into something that reflects this, what I'm just describing?" And then I went into the theme, etc. And Bill, now she's coming closer to the camera. She's coming closer to the camera. And "That's it, Angelo, that's it. Okay, now go back into the woods. Fall down. Back into you know, et cetera, et cetera." When I finished playing it, the hair on his arms was standing up. He had a little mist in his eyes. Gives me a big hug. He said, "Angelo, you just composed the major theme for what I see of Twin Peaks." I said, "Well, David, I'll go home and work on it." He said, "No, what you just did is every note that it's got to be, and don't change a thing." And I never did.
Angelo, it's been an absolute pleasure hearing all of your stories and all the amazing things that have inspired you, so thank you very much.
Well, I love it, and it's just been great. Thanks a lot.